You think you know about relationships, but you're wrong. Listen, there's no magic bullet. I'm teaching life skills.
When you're sick, you need medicine. It don't always taste good.
Nah.
But it'll get you better.
You
need this medicine.
Yeah.
It ain't gonna always taste good. But this is what you need. Men and women, bottom line, we need to have the conversation. Your partner wants to give up control, but only if you know how to drive. This is about being the best you could ever be. Whoever you are, I don't care if you're a man, a woman, LGBTQ, space aliens. I'll save anybody. I don't care. I'll teach a hedgehog how to have a threesome.
What do you mean by that?
Look, you don't have to listen to me, but you're wrong.
Listen, I know I'm great. And I know you're thinking, Dante, there's no way I could be like you. But you could be me, you know why?
Because you know who I was? Before I was me, I was you. You.
Man score 202.
Better hear what I've got to say because you won't get it again.
I'm not an alpha male. I'm not a beta male either. I'm just a better man. Better man.
Well, put your happiness first, because if you don't, they won't.
What's up, what's up, what's up, GYBB, get your balls back, WWDD, What Would Dante Do? The Sexual Revolution is being podcasted, and I am excited. Harry, are you ready to rock and roll?
Absolutely, man. I don't even know why you asked me a question like that. You know goddamn well I'm ready to rock and roll. I'm doing great.
Here's the crazy thing about this. This is a special show. Now, I know I've said that 400 times before, but this time I mean it.
All right.
It's happening.
Nice.
You want to do the intro?
Yeah, why not? Because this guy and I go way back. This is not just any regular guest. This guy and I, maybe 10 years at this point. I don't know how long we've been friends, but we met doing the Andy Kaufman Awards. We are each recipients of the now defunct Andy Kaufman Award. A fantastic comedian. Give it up for my friend Marcus Monroe, everybody. Put
What's
your hands
up, Marcus? What's going on, brother? How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great, man. Thank you for having me on your podcast, Harry. Thank you for the lovely introduction. I think, Harry, it's been 12 years since we've known each other.
Is that true? Wow.
12 years, man. And we look great.
You know what? We do look pretty good. I do look better. I can actually say I look better now than I did 12 years ago, because I was a mess 12 years ago, honest.
Well, you're doing good. You were always so funny. I immediately gravitated towards you during the Andy Kaufman Award back in the day, because you did wrestling themed.
Right.
I wouldn't call it sketches, but like your performance was like wrestling themed, and you talked about the wrestlers who had died. You showed this beautiful montage.
One year I did my whole Andy Kaufman performance was a tribute to dead wrestlers who died of
so funny.
Just because it was wrestlers, that was the time frame, like wrestlers were dying left and right due to
all
the wrestlers who had been doing nothing but cocaine and steroids
and Percocets and
amphetamines. Yeah. They were dropping like flies, and then the companies were acting like, oh, I don't know, whatever, you know, it's another heart attack, what are you gonna do? So I did a whole tribute, and then it just got longer and longer and crazier, and then wrestlers who died who died, but you're not that sad because they already achieved what they were going to achieve. And then wrestlers who died of ODs, wrestlers who died. Here's wrestlers who are going to die and how they're going to die. Yeah, it was fun, man. It was those contests were very weird and fun and some oddball shit. And
it was so fun. And I remember the year you won, I think it was me and Harrison kind of played a joke on you, where we were judges and we knew that you had made it to the finals. But we came up to you and we're like, "Hey, man, we're really sorry. We tried really hard." And then you were so bummed out because it was like maybe the fifth year that you had done it.
I mean, it was the fifth year in a row that I competed in this contest, and I was so hell bent on winning it.
And then like we kind of knew that we were gonna like, okay, this is Harry's year. I mean, not only should he should have won the year I won. Like I think like he was so funny.
Right.
I thought so too, but that doesn't matter.
right. I mean, the thing about that award though, it's you had people doing all sorts of different things, and
crazy
it was really
shit,
about
yeah.
the spirit of.
Wait,
of
explain.
Andy.
I think you're going. You guys are going off on this tangent, which
tangent,
Harry
yeah.
always does.
That's true. I'm known for that.
He explained what the Andy Kaufman thing was and what the kind of performance stuff. Because I remember the year that he won. I remember him being, and I don't know, I've known Harry. Harry suffers for depression and suicidal depression. So it was great that you guys ran a joke on him because he might have killed himself. But anyway, it's all in fun.
We only let the joke go for 2 minutes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
because we knew his name was going to be announced.
That's all he needed, Marcus. It was 2 minutes.
2 minutes.
I'm sorry, Harry.
You'd have been like, I'm really sorry. Pow! And you were like, what the fuck? Was that a gunshot?
I'm going to go out to get cigarettes. You don't smoke. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Sorry. If
explain
that was
to Andy Kaufman.
Really
hold on. I'm getting a visit right now. Hold on.
There we go. There's little Dante Jr.
Little Dante Jr. in the
He's
house.
Getting bigger. I remember the last time you haven't seen him in a while, but watch this.
Oh, my God.
Jeez.
look at him. My God, he's gigantic.
That's a man. That is a full-on man
He's not even two, Marcus. That's the thing.
We were saying we gotta watch because he's getting so big, but he's only 20 months. And he's talking better, but he's not talking like what he looks like his age. So everybody thinks he's retarded.
Oh, shit.
He looks like this. He's five, and then he's going, la, 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 la.
Oh, my God.
La, la, la.
That must be a real treat at the park in the sandbox. Oh, my God. He's adorable.
Oh, yeah. Hold on. He got big, right? Every time you see him, he's bigger.
I mean, every time I go in there, he's just, it's a different baby.
Yeah.
Like, he's just gigantic. He's got a full set of teeth. He's already
wearing his Kyrie Irving's on. He's got his Kyrie.
He's already squatting 75 pounds. It's crazy. Look at those. Oh, he's got the Kyrie Irving.
Oh, those are nice.
Nice.
He has better shoes than I have. My God.
Well, thanks to the
better clothes than me.
That's actually the what you call it? The fans. They always send him sneakers. They keep
them. Oh, wow.
Yo, tell him. He's a size 10.
You tell, throw us a bone. Let him know he's grown big. Yeah.
Bye-bye, baby.
Throw a size 10 wide. And that's how
yes, exactly.
100%. So, getting back to the thing, he is adorable.
The Kaufman Award
was like an award given in the spirit of Andy Kaufman. If you don't know who Andy Kaufman is, he would do these weird avant-garde sort of comedy things. And sometimes he would do these sort of, I guess, semi-pranks or performance art sort of stuff where he would antagonize the audience on purpose, and it was sort of like
I think one day he read War and Peace on he actually went to a comedy show and he read War and Peace and until everybody left.
He would do that. He would purposely walk out audiences, but do weird things. And I mean, he's legendary. There's documentaries about him. He's fantastic. So this award was that. So it was comedy, but it also had to be weird. It was like there was no set decision of what this award was. So I don't know. I mean, a lot of different people. Marcus did some amazing stuff. I'm glad he won it. I finally won it because after 5 years, I did a film about how I was sick and tired of losing the Andy Kaufman Awards.
Yeah.
And that's what
won
me the Andy
Kaufman. When you were talking
to
us, he did video. I remember you did video of talking to yourself in the future. And in the past, it was just like,
and then
really?
I went back in time and I killed all the former, like I invented a time machine. And then I went back in time and started killing all the people who won the Andy Kaufman Award.
Did you kill Marcus? Or no?
I did kill Marcus. Marcus
you killed
is
me
it.
In a car, I think. I was tied up.
He was
like,
tied and duct taped
in a car.
Duct taped in a car, and he was dead in a car. And I did a whole montage.
How'd you go, Harrison?
Harrison couldn't do it. He wanted to. I think scheduling wise, he couldn't do it. So I just dragged a box. I showed his picture and then I dragged like a box that was, his body was in it. But I killed Nick Vatterott. A lot of really great, talented people who won it.
Did Kristen Shaw win that 1 year?
She did win it 1 year. Kristen
Shaw. The
first
year, right?
I don't remember if it was the first year.
No, not the first year.
The second or third.
Connie won it the first year. Then Brent Weinbach
won it. Yeah.
And then Reggie Watts, Kristen Shaw. I think Kristen and Reggie kind of won it back to back.
Yeah. A lot of people who are making significantly more money than I am have won that award. have gone on to great things. And I'm broadcasting out of my dad's garage while I wait to find a new apartment.
But it's dope, son.
It's
dope.
Great. Yeah. I'm legitimately proud of it, man. But that's where I met Marcus. And Marcus is, we always gravitated towards each other. Marcus is a good dude.
I think last time I saw you, you came to the cellar and we were hanging out at the cellar for a bit.
Yeah, man. That was a good time, man. I always love going over there.
Marcus, did we know each other before or not really?
Well, I had known who you were, but we had never been on the same show or
like,
talked.
So I just kind of like I kind of connected with Marcus and I was like, yo, I like this dude. I like, oh, I want to have him on my podcast. And so like I was just instantly like I said when I saw Marcus, I was like, man, I love like I you know what's too? Somebody had hosted the show before and they were horrible. They were just super like they, you know, just didn't have control over the room. The room sucked and they kept saying they kept just being inauthentic. Just, oh, you guys are great. You guys are fantastic. You know, this crowd, all right, guys, you ready for you? And they were just an awful, awful room. And he never, and they were talking and they were talking to each other. Just, and he never really stopped the room and said, hey, you guys suck. You know, you guys really stink. And this is, this show's going to suck if you keep acting this way. And so,
here's, sorry, not to interrupt, but this is an interesting part because this relates directly to dating, right?
Right.
And so, the thing is that they teach you, the initial thing is you want to please the audience. So you never want to shit, in theory, you don't want to shit on the audience because then you'll lose the audience. But it's the same thing with relationships. Guys want to please a woman, right? So you don't want to insult her, even though she deserves to be insulted and she's not a good person. So the irony is you keep going
not
along.
I think you can push back on being insulted, okay. But she deserves the truth.
The truth. Yeah. The truth. Like the truth is like, you're not good. Like you're not a good person. This happened to me the other day. I was doing a show and it was an outdoor show. So these people were walking by. These two ladies were like very flattering. They were like, oh, you're very funny. You're funny. And then I had my dog tag that I was wearing. And she goes, what's that? I go, it's a dog tag I have. She goes, what's the picture of? I go, it's a picture of my dog. He passed away. So I have a little thing that my girl got me with the dog. She goes, oh, that's a bummer. You should get rid of that. And I go, what? I was like, what? She goes, oh, yeah, it's just kind of like a bummer. I go, what the fuck is the matter with you? Which I would never do like 5 years ago. But I was just like, what? Do you understand that I just clearly this has some type of significant value to me? Because otherwise, why would I wear it?
You should get rid of it?
Yeah, she was like a...
Was
like
she attractive? Or
she was like... older, like milfy, but like
she
clearly,
was hot.
She was attractive.
Like she could have been hot back in the days.
She was. She turned some heads in Studio 54. You
okay,
know what I'm
fair
saying?
Enough. Fair enough. She got a lot of free cocaine.
She got a lot of She got a lot of bumps and never paid. You know.
Yeah, I got you.
And that's what I knew. What this was, I go. You were. That is a terrible thing to say. Well, oh no, that's not what I meant. I go. No, it is what you meant. And like, you know, she was apologetic or whatever, but I didn't give a fuck because I wasn't trying to hit on her.
Right.
It doesn't matter. But at the same time, I'm like, what she needed to be told that because I'm sure she's gotten away with saying a bunch of outlandish shit that's just mean and reckless.
Yeah.
And she didn't even think it was mean and reckless. She thought she was being like funny or something, I guess. But I don't think she was breaking balls. She was like, yeah, that's a bummer. You should not wear that.
And she's telling you shouldn't wear your dog tag.
Right. Yeah. Just the nature of that. Like, what the fuck is the matter? Why would you tell somebody? We just met. This is our entire interaction. This is not like 2 minutes into the.
Did you say that as well? Did you say I met you seconds ago?
I didn't. I just said, why would you say something? Clearly, this has some value. What's the matter with you? I didn't even get to that part. There's so much rushing through my head at that moment. Like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah.
But she wasn't used to that. And she turned her demeanor. I mean, I was still polite and whatever. And I was done with the conversation. But like it was clear that nobody had stopped her in her life to go. Yeah, no, you're being an asshole right now. But that's the same thing. Sorry. So to get back to what you were talking about with the audience, which is every once in a while you have to not every once in a while. You should always be authentic and tell the truth. It's one thing to try to be polite and to try to maintain a good rapport and relationship. It's another thing to lie to them and keep this awful energy going.
Yeah.
Totally agree. It was just a fun room and I don't host often,
right,
but when I do, I try to pretend, put myself in the audience shoes.
Yeah.
Sometimes the shows can feel really long. You got a lot of people on there. Some people are running the clock. Some people aren't very good. Yeah. That wasn't the case, thankfully.
A lot of them were not good. A lot of them were not good. But Marcus was setting them up. I mean, Marcus's energy, it was infectious in a way that made the room. The room, I'm telling you, the room, that when I saw that, like, initially, I was like, oh, this is going to stink. And I think Marcus's energy was so infectious that he made them a great audience.
Thank you very much, Dante. It was a fun challenge because hosting is not easy, and you know, you're right, you gotta keep that energy up. You have an act that just bombs. You have to reset, refresh. You're kind of starting over. You got to build that momentum up again. So I'm always doing a little bit of time in between the acts and just kind of doing crowd work and making sure everyone's comfortable. That's the job of an MC. You're kind of like the host of, it's like people are coming into your comedy club. Like, you don't own the club, but in a sense, you're in charge.
You're the host. Yeah. I mean, that's why they call it the host, but I mean, you set the tone, you maintain the tone. And sometimes you need to stop and go, Hey, this is not okay.
It's interesting the way you mentioned it, putting yourself in the audience's shoes too, which is also having like, being empathetic or understanding what the other person's perspective is too, which is like, all right, what are they dealing with and how much of this can I affect? Or also thinking about like, all right, this person just bombed, let me reset the room. They don't necessarily teach you that. Like, nobody sits there and teaches you that, but it's giving a shit about what that person is going through. Like, let me create the most positive environment. The same thing, like, you know, to tie it back, like, what is that other person I'm trying to date going through, or what are they dealing with? You know?
Mm. Yeah.
I think when it comes to hosting, when it comes to dating, all these things, the most important thing is being self-aware.
Fair enough. And what way do you mean that? Like,
because there's nothing worse than being at a show and seeing, having an MC come on and think everything is going great when it's clearly not, or vice versa. Even though you want it to be going good, you have to stop and say, okay, what is really going on here? You're not saying lines that you memorize, that you're not doing bits. You're like being in the moment. And dating and hosting, you could learn a lot from just being self-aware, know where your place is, know what people are kind of thinking about you when they look at you. What do you look like? All those kinds of things. That's why I start when I'm hosting, I always talk about my appearance right away, you know, just so, hey, I know what I look like. Let's talk about it or something like that.
Right. Right. And let's get past it so that we can move on to the,
I didn't say get past it. What's wrong that they need to get past? What are you saying about me?
Well, you know, I mean, look at me, dude. You gotta know we need to talk about it and then get past it. That's always my, because otherwise they get so fixated on it that they're not, you know, they're not even listening because they're like, well, what is this? What is it? You know? And then once you mention it, they laugh and I mean, you know, look, you got a great Mbak look. Come on now. You know,
I love it. Mbak look. I'll take it. I'll take it. You look like
all three members of Hanson.
Thank you so much, man. I do appreciate that. You have no idea. You just made my night.
They are good looking guys. They are all good looking bunch of dudes. The self-awareness is great. I think that there's also a point of if you're acting like this dude who was hosted, he hosted the day, the show before you. The show
before yours, yeah.
And it was like, oh, you guys are great. And it's like, they know they suck. They know that the situation, and even if they know, they don't know that they suck, they know that it's not going well. And then what you're basically saying is, I'm willing, as a host, I'm willing to put up with whatever you want to toss at me. I'm not going to mention it. It's going to be the 800-pound gorilla in the room, and nobody's going to mention it because I'm too insecure about who I am as a performer to even mention this because I want you to like me. And I'll take whatever you give me. Whatever you want to give me, you'll take it because I don't deserve anything.
That sounds so much like what guys do and put up with, you know, like women saying reckless shit and behaving in crazy ways, like, you know, drunk chicks. That's why the worst audience in comedy is the drunk woman. The drunk.
The, yeah.
It's
the best. People say that. Go ahead.
Who do you think?
Sorry.
Go ahead.
It's nothing worse than a drunk dude who you end up having to fight after. I've had that. You don't get that often. But a dude who's like, fuck you, and running up on the stage. I'd take a drunk girl.
What that happened to you in the past? Like, do you get a lot of that? Because I'm trying to think of how many times I've seen that. Yeah. I'm saying how many times I've seen that compared to. I'm not saying you're wrong. I mean, that's obviously your experience, but maybe it's the Dante Nero experience where guys are like, it's kind of like professional wrestlers going to a bar. Like, how tough is this guy? Oh, this guy thinks he's tough. Maybe you get a little bit of that. Like, Chuck Liddell goes into a bar. Oh, big man.
Big guy. You want to fuck up my bell? Oh, right. So what are you going to do there?
That might be another. What I'm saying is that might be another Dante Nero exclusive experience.
It happened to Big J at the Strip.
That's true. That did happen.
It happened to Gary Goldman. It happened to Ben Bailey. Mike DiStefano.
Mike DiStefano had his fucking lunatic brother there with him.
It happened to Patrice plenty of times.
Yeah.
It happened to Mike Birbiglia.
Jesus,
once.
Who the fuck attacked Mike Birbiglia?
He was roasting this guy, and he got. I mean, look, we could go on YouTube now. Remember that video I sent you? Guy kicks a comic, kicks guy in the stomach. The guy runs up on the stage and he kicks the dude in the stomach. We sent a couple of those bitches.
I gotta find that one. Hold on, Let me see if I have that. Fair enough. I think in my experience, I've seen a lot more. Now, here's the thing. Those are like catastrophic events. Like, those rarely happen.
But
we're
saying those are the worst.
I guess by quantity, though.
You didn't say quantity.
Yeah, you're right.
Said,
in all fairness, you're right.
If I got a knuckle up or I sent you one where the guy hit the dude with a mic stand.
Let me find that. I got to find it.
Jeez, insane.
Yeah, so man. I mean, I get what you mean. Drunk white girls or bachelorette parties is annoying. Sure, it's annoying, but you don't have to beat somebody off the stage. I had a army vet run up on the stage. Well, he didn't run up on the stage, but he was like, I used to do a joke about a guy missing fingers, a kid that I used to.
Oh, that's right.
And the dude goes, "You think amputees is a fucking joke?" And he starts running up and starts approaching the stage. And I was like, dude, don't do it, man. Don't do it. Don't do it to yourself. He was like,
Sorry, go ahead, Dante.
No, go.
I had a guy, I was on a cruise performing. This was like 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy just wandered on stage and it scared me. I didn't know what to do.
He just wandered on?
Just came on stage and during my set. Just stood there and I kind of pushed him away. I was like, what are you like? I think this also like goes to wrestling, because a lot of time wrestling fans will jump in the ring and then the wrestlers will just beat the hell out of these guys.
Yeah.
And I think that
actually happens where dudes,
it happened
when
a
legit.
Lot more in, back in the day. Now, yeah. Like a big show has
they
kind of
know it's a,
they have
know.
Security. So now the thing is let the security handle it. Cause they don't want lawsuits and stuff. Like
right.
But back in the day,
Bret Hart Hall of Fame.
Oh Jesus. Yeah. A guy, Bret Hart was doing a Hall of Fame speech and a fucking mentally ill, like MMA fighter came up and fucking grabbed him like with a German suplex, grabbed him behind the waist and threw him on the ground on the ring. I mean, Bret Hart's retired. He's an older guy. Let me see if I can find it. But
really?
And then they proceeded to beat. Here's the thing. There were no fans there in that year. The whole front row is all professional wrestlers because it's the Hall of Fame thing.
Oh, my God.
So immediately like 10 to 20 professional wrestlers beat the fuck out of this guy. On his way, as police
like,
and security
the
are escorting
Hart family,
him.
Like Bret Hart's like
his
relatives,
whole family
are
there.
The whole family
family's there. His whole family beat the shit out of this guy. But I think like if you were on stage, Dante, Harry, this question's for both of you.
Okay.
And a guy just wanders on stage.
That's weird.
What are you within your rights to like beat the shit out of a person for doing that? Or
I mean
no?
now, I mean now, because, I mean when we when we started doing comedy, man, but now you're not in the rights. To beating anybody anymore. I mean, I always say that, you know, I grew up in the 90s, dude. I shot a fair one on 42nd Street. 42nd Street on Broadway and 42nd Street. And the cops watched it, and then we ended it, and then dude had enough, and we just went on. And then now they just arrest everybody, you know? Right. Like, there's no even question about who started it. You know, it's such a different time. Yeah,
that's why now I think the policy is that security has to deal with that. They have security teams. It's just if someone sneaks. But back in the day, it was once you clear the barricade, and legally you might be fair game.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Especially the thing was this with the wrestling ring, and the wrestlers will always tell you, the fans don't. Most people don't know how to have never entered a wrestling ring in their life, right?
Right.
So the instinct is not to slide under. They get in and stick their head in first, and then CM Punk goes. All you have to do is punt them right in the head if you see them coming, and then you're good to go, and then you don't get in any trouble. But I'm trying to.
This
find
sounds like Tom and Jerry. It's Tom sticking his head in and Jerry hitting him with a big mallet.
That's what it's pretty equivalent much. To, man.
Pretty much.
That's crazy. I mean, I remember fucking Ben Bailey spitting in this chick's face. Like, he had a little anger problem back in the day.
But what happened with the Ben Bailey incident?
They were just, you know, they were arguing. The chick kept heckling and talking shit, and he was this. And Ben was like, you know, he's not no, like, Ben boxed and he wrestled in high school and shit. And the dude, she was with some guy, and then the chick came up and he hocked a loogie in her face. And he was like, oh, shit. You know, it was, yeah. And Joe Matarese used to get into a lot of fights. Like, it was almost like he had a thing where he would just get into people.
Well, and in all fairness, Joe Matarese released an album which was consisted of all tracks of him fighting with the audience. Like, he released an entire 10-track comedy album, which was just him.
And I think it's called
Joe Matarese versus the audience.
Yeah, and it's like, what's the least common denominator here, guys? Joe Matarese. It's always him. But there's a couple of dudes that kind of institute that kind of and then when I used to do black rooms, that could happen. That could definitely happen. You get somebody's getting roasted. I don't know if you remember. I don't know if you remember Harry. I don't know if you remember Russell Simmons' favorite comic was G. George. He used to call himself G. George from Valley Forge. He used to do old school stock jokes with a different twist, and he would tell jokes, you know.
Let me see if I recognize this guy.
And I produced the show, and there was a dude, a good friend of mine, who was like a kingpin. He was like a drug kingpin, and he was a dark-skinned dude, and he starts roasting him about how black he is and blah, 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 blah. And I'm standing on the side going ixnay on the oaks, Jay.
Oh,
right.
Jesus.
And,
you don't see that.
And he goes, he's sitting back with his crew. And I'm like, you have no idea how violent this is. Right. And, the guy says, and I actually use this line a couple of times. He goes, hey, funny man, you ever hear about the joke about the comic found dead in the dumpster?
Oh, Jesus. which is super funny.
And he goes, I'll tell you after the show.
That's even funnier. Fuck, man. It's terrible when you get a roaster gets a good one on you, like a heckler gets a good one on you. You're like,
well,
fuck,
first,
man.
First he kind of said, yo, all right, yo, I get it. I can take it. He said, yo, spread that shit around a little bit. Like you
know what?
Like,
he was being reasonable.
He was being reasonable.
I get it. Yeah. It's fun. We're all having fun, but Jesus.
And G. George was like relentless. He was like, motherfucker, dude, you don't tell me this is my motherfucking show. I fucking black ass motherfucker look like a black Q-tip. Blah, 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 blah. He just kept going. You look like an oil slick. You look like a seal. He was like, yo, spread that shit. And then he said it. You ever find like you hear the joke about the guy found dead in the dumpster? I'll tell you about the show. And I was like, dog. And I went over there. I was like, doggy. And then I went. I had to snake the dude out of the club. Because like it could have got real funky. But yeah, did you find that, Harry? Or no?
Which one? I'm looking for the Bret Hart one.
I don't know whatever you was looking for. I can see your eyes dancing.
Sorry, bud. I'm trying to find a good one of the Bret Hart thing, but
this is a really fun rabbit hole to go down. Is fans coming up on stage or coming into wrestling rings and just seeing what happens, because this is when you're catching everybody off guard.
They're
in their own zone, they're in their momentum. Okay, here we go.
Let's see.
This is great.
That's Bret Hart.
Doing the Hall of Fame speech.
Wow,
he's an older guy. I mean, you know, he's also
I've never seen old pictures of him. Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, this is from 2019, so this wasn't that long ago.
Wow, I can't even see his. I can't really even see his. You know, because you're so used to him being wet.
black hair.
I can't recognize him.
He looks almost the same, except he's got gray hair. But I mean, he's an older guy. Watch, this guy comes in from underneath.
Oh yeah, he got the pin.
Grabs him and throws him to the ground, and then immediately, like, fucking 10 to 20 wrestlers come in. They don't even wait for security, and some of them are covering him up, and some of them are kicking the shit out of him.
Really.
Dude, I mean, his nephew is there. Watch, they're going to drag him down from underneath like they're dragging him.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a couple guys that are getting their shots in, old school wise.
Do you think the audience thought it was planned?
No, probably not. No, they wouldn't. First of all, Bret Hart is like he got kicked in the head by Goldberg. He had to retire for concussion reasons.
Really?
But Bret Hart is a no, do not touch Bret Hart, like, at all, because he could seriously get hurt.
Wow.
So nobody thought, everybody knew that this was like, this fucking guy was a lunatic. There's also no reason for Bret Hart to be doing a storyline in the middle of a Hall of Fame speech.
But look, how long did Moolah did, I mean, Evans was old as shit when Moolah. She was still
Yeah, they were still doing stuff, but I mean, that was during the regular show. I'm trying to see if they had
Moolah had to be 60 something, right? She wrestled into
God, 70s. They would do.
She would go through tables in her 70s. Moolah
let them throw her through a table. The Dudley Boys power bombed her through a table.
And what was her, the chick she used to, the other
Young.
Older? Mae Young was older than her, though, right?
Yeah, Mae Young. Yeah. They were both older. Let's see if these are comics getting, I want to play the audio. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
this I guess happens more. This is like a compilation.
This is great. This is great. No, I know. Whoa, I've seen some of these videos that are clearly staged. I think maybe I want to say Pauly Shore had one that was completely staged.
Yeah.
Yeah, Pauly Shore had one.
Somebody get the police.
Yeah.
I think Paulie's was a work. I'm not sure though.
Paulie's was like a bullshit work, yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That's crazy.
I've seen also one with the guitar. A guy comes on stage, the guy
I'll try to find here it is. Here it is. Here it is.
You're talking about the honky tonk man?
No, not the honky tonk.
No. No, this is even better. This guy goes, "You all saw that, right? He was attacking me." And the audience is like, "Nope."
Here we go. Wait, I'm trying to see.
That looks like the honky tonk man. You just don't have
they
to
all
pump
look like
dope.
The honky tonk man. And the guy's gonna come up. Your guy's gonna come up.
Oh man! Just smacked.
You can't see
broke his guitar.
You can't see him connecting with it. He broke his guitar onto him. But the best part is this. People think because of the honky tonk man, like they think you could just break a guitar over somebody. Those guitars are hollowed out. They're gimmicked. If you hit somebody with a real guitar.
That is like an electric guitar.
Well, that's true.
Right. Yeah.
That's crazy. Marcus, I wanted to ask you about this whole thing. I mean, so clearly you do good. You got a girlfriend or no? Are you with?
No, I'm married.
Oh, you're married. How long have you been married?
It'll be 9 years in August.
Wow. How old are you? 12? Like, when did you get married? Would you give her a block? And she seems like,
I'm married in? When I was 28. I'm 36.
Oh, cool, cool, cool. You have kids too or no?
I have a stepdaughter though.
Okay. That's dope.
Yeah.
Did good with the ladies, huh? Back in the days, I could.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I had fun, you know? Yeah. I mean, I was like an old hoe.
Yeah.
I had like a lot of girlfriends for a few years. So I was, you know, I was one of those guys.
You were
a
serial monogamous type of dude?
Exactly. Yep. 100%.
Did were your parents together or no? Did they stay together?
Get this, man. This is gross. My parents were high school sweethearts.
Wow.
Oh, boy.
Still together. Still madly in love. Why do you think
that's gross? Like, that's
because, because Marcus has experienced the world and just the idea that they found the one couple, the one person in their high school, and they've been together with nobody else for that long.
What were you going to say, Marcus?
It's not gross. It's beautiful. But it's like, don't you want to, like, you think, like, okay, don't you wish they were with other people too at some point just to see what else is out there? But hey, if it works for them, they're happy. They love each other very much. So, and I came from that. So I thought like, this is going to be me too. So when I was in high school and my high school girlfriend, I was like, oh, this is probably going to be it. Because I was just like thinking, oh, everyone meets their wife in high school.
Right.
Thankfully that was not the case. And I met my wife and she is more amazing than any girl like I've ever been with by leaps and bounds.
That's dope. That's
what
dope.
Is it about her that made you want to settle down?
She's really smart. Like she's down for anything. She's super smart. She can talk. We can talk about anything for hours and hours. Like before we got together, we were both kind of pen paling, emailing each other back and forth. So we had met through mutual friends, and then we were both kind of seeing other people. So we just, and she lived in Wisconsin, I lived in New York. So we kind of pen pal, and we would just like have these really fun conversation sometimes about nothing. Like we even made up like different characters. We would talk in like fake accents, and it was just all like just like shooting the shit, like not thinking so much.
I did the same thing, only it was their real accent. It was a lot of different holes with a lot of different accents from different countries.
And like, my wife is a little bit older than me too. So I liked that. I thought it was really cool that it was kind of no games. I didn't have to worry about people in their early 20s or trying to make me jealous or, you know, right. There wasn't any of that BS.
It's her daughter. It's her daughter.
She's her daughter. Yes.
And how old were you when you guys actually hooked up? How old was the daughter when you guys hooked up?
Bro, are you sitting down?
Yeah.
She must have been like 17 or 18.
The daughter was, wait a minute. Okay. So
you got to watch my set, bro.
Yeah.
What's the age gap to get this very clear?
There's like 15 years in between us.
Wow. Yeah. That's dope. I mean, but you're right. You know, when somebody, you know, this is a kind of a frivolousness that young girls have where it's just all gonna, like, they think it's just all gonna work out. Like, I can just kind of play. And when you get older, there's a seriousness about, women have a seriousness about relationships and stuff like that, because it's just
I think it's because they've been through some shit. Yeah. So they're, one, more appreciative of the stuff, and they're able to put aside a little bit more of the bullshit and stuff that in a younger relationship would create problems, or they're just a little more confident and they've been through some shit, so they're more appreciative of a good
man. I don't know if it's as confident as it is appreciative. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like you've been through it, you know the bullshit, and you go, look, I know a nice guy. They don't toss a nice guy to the side.
Yeah, exactly. They appreciate the shit that a guy is being nice and not just being a bitch or whatever.
I mean, your girl is older than you or no? Is she older than you or no? Yeah.
Yeah, but not by a ton, but by a little bit, by like a couple of years.
But it's different. Yeah. It's such a different thing.
It feels completely different than dating a girl in her 20s. Yeah.
Yeah, because
completely different.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like no games. It's like you're a nice, it's like young girls are like, oh, he's so nice. I don't like him. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like he likes me too much.
That could cost you the job.
Yeah,
being too nice could cost you the gig, and you don't even know it.
I mean, there are still games, just they're different games. You know, like they're just different, and they're more like approachable. If you're open and honest, there you shouldn't have any problems with any of these games. But
what games? What games do you perceive? What are the difference in the games?
Oh, I mean, well, you know, okay. So when you're younger, it's maybe I'm just trying to think off the top of my head. one of the games could, oh, you can come up. You can come up. One of the games could be, I don't know.
Give me an example. You know,
I've been in situations where people try to make you jealous by hanging out with certain people. I don't think on either side hasn't been a thing, because we were just open with our, hey, I like you, you like me, let's be together. We don't have to worry about, you know, these are my intentions. I'm making them clear. These are my expectations. I'm making them clear to you. You know, a lot of times it's just having that open dialogue that when you're in your 20s, you don't really feel like you want to have, because it's like, well, let's just have fun and see what happens. Yeah.
Right, because you're being disingenuous in the first place.
For me, I'll say for me, like, the difference is, for example, if I'm busy doing with the stand-up stuff, right? Like, I had an important audition or whatever, so my girl can put aside, like, if I don't talk to her all day because I'm working on some stuff, she doesn't trip about it necessarily. Where a younger girl has a little bit more of a fragile ego, a little bit, where she's like, if he's not talking to me, obviously he doesn't care about me. And it's like, no, that has nothing to do with this. So she can appreciate that if I'm working, I might not necessarily be talking to her, but when I do talk to her, you know, we're going to have a good time. That's
totally. I mean, attention is a big thing too. I mean, when you're in your 20s or you're even in high school, giving your girlfriend, your boyfriend attention, it means everything to them. Writing notes to them, sending them emails, texts, and it still is a big thing. Like, you want to feel like someone is thinking about you,
right?
But it's not going to be a deal breaker, right? If you have an important show coming up, you have to study, you have to.
And it doesn't have to be all the time. Is the other thing too?
Correct. Like, yeah, 100%.
Well, I don't know. I think the need is the same, but I think there's a pragmatic level where we understand where we got to work. We have to achieve certain things. There's certain things that we're pursuing that's not personal. I mean,
you have responsibilities too when you're older. Like, you have to provide for a family. You have to save. You have to do taxes. There's a lot more than just like, we're just going to date and see what happens. You have to think about the future. Do you want to have kids? Do you want to move in together? There's a lot, like, the stakes are raised when when you get older.
Also, and especially a woman appreciates those responsibilities where a 20-year-old might not. Like, I don't give a fuck about your taxes. I want to go hang out and I want to go to the club or whatever.
Totally, I never had a young girl ask me what my credit score was.
Exactly.
Never.
I didn't. So, and these are also things that I was 28 when I married my wife, but I learned a lot from her because she had been through it. Yeah. And it's so nice just to be like, do you know how to do this? She's like, yes, I can do this. You know, it's great. Like, I talk about this in my act, but God forbid if anything were to ever happen to us, I could never be with someone my own age, because she's just so much smart. Like, she has 15 years of experience on me. You know what I mean? Right. Like, she's also like, she won't admit to this, but I think she's like some kind of savant because she's so smart. Like, she remembers everything. Like, we were in the car at like 6 a.m. in an Uber going to LaGuardia, and there was like classical music playing. She just like sat back and was like, I think I know whose song this is. And I thought that she was joking, but she said like some classical name, some really obscure name, nothing I'd ever heard of before.
Like Beethoven.
It wasn't Beethoven. No, it was someone, I forget who it was, but it was like a classical composer I had never heard of. And yeah, she just knows everything.
She's either a savant or you are immature and don't know shit. One or the other. Like, it could be that.
It's definitely a combination. I will say, I will happily admit that is definitely a combination.
Here's the thing,
I can't
though,
do much.
For Marcus, even either case, dating a girl who's younger than him and don't know shit ain't going to help him.
Right,
so
right,
whether,
right.
Whether she's smart or Marcus is dumb,
right,
it doesn't matter. Ain't gonna be helped by a 21-year-old who don't know shit.
Right, exactly. And also my perspective is my reality. So if I think she's a genius, in my world, she's a genius, and I'm pretty sure she is.
Right, right, right. I remember I was 22 and dating this chick who was 44, and she was blowing me. She did this. I'll never forget this. This is how amazing it was. She was blowing me and then licked my balls, but she was straddled over me. And then she was jacking me like a pool cue. Like she was doing a, and I was like, this is amazing. Like,
like Minnesota fats.
Yeah, like she was jerking my dick like a pool cue and then rubbing the head on her nipple at the same time. I was like, this is how. Who taught you this?
Yeah,
this like what you want to say, like when, right you watch there, Buddy Rich too, play the drums. Like that's three too many things for me. I'm just like, just do one thing and be good at that one thing. I don't need you to bring out a bop it. You know,
she. I was like, I. You know, it's funny because I'm 55, and I still remember this yeah. pool. I remember this fucking pool cue thing that she did to me, and I'm like, I was fucking amazing. But I mean, I was 22. I also remember. I remember an old because like I was a male stripper, and these older women, these MILFy chicks, would snatch me up. And I remember this chick. She got this really nice hotel room, like king size bed, like a 5-star hotel. And I was like, "Yeah, let's fuck." And she was like, "And I was like, fuck." And she was like, "Look, we got the room all night." Like, calm down. Like, just and it threw me off because I was so accustomed to kind of rushing through it. Like, oh, your mom might be coming home. Who's coming in the door? My roommates on. You know what I mean? It was like I remember not even being able to perform because she kept just going. Well, we'll just take a nap and then we'll get to do it again. And then if you want to stay the weekend, we can get the. And I was like. This is crazy. I'm like losing my mind. But I mean, I think, you know, it's a funny thing how we perspectively where we're at the time. And we look at this thing that's so amazing. It's funny because I always say that older guys, like a lot of older guys who have like gone through divorces and then they're trying to get back in the dating scene and they really think that they're worthless. Like they, you know, they don't look as good as they did, or maybe they've lost some hair or they look whatever. And they really think that they're worthless. But what happens is when you understand, like I always say, older dudes always have a guy. Like when, you know, they're dating some girl and the plumb, you know, the pipe leaks or the pipe breaks. They know a plumber that, you know, a 40, 50 year old dude knows a plumber. He knows a carpenter. He knows a guy who can fix your transmission. He knows a tag. He's got a tax guy. He's got a. And so all of those things kind of act like a this safety net that younger girls just have no idea like how to approach these. I think in a way, the same way that you kind of look at your wife now, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a perfect way to describe it.
And knowing that value, but I think that they don't, men especially, they understand that they have this value, but because it becomes so easy to them, they don't think that it has any value. And so they're very insecure about the things that they think that this person wants. Like if you think about it, what was one of the things that you remember early on that your wife knew about that you didn't know about? That kind of really kind of blew your mind. It was like, oh, this is cool.
Oh, man. I mean, you name and literally any subject. It was like I really at the time was only knew about like comedy and performing because in school I was a terrible student. I studied comedy. I studied like variety arts. I loved all that stuff. I didn't really know. Like I had interest in like wrestling and I love boy bands and like weird stuff. So I was like, it was.
Oh, so you like, really, the Hanson joke really got, it really touched you in a serious way.
You really made my night with that comment. Like I'm still like, oh my gosh, Dante, what else? I'm like, oh. Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, it's I have like.
You do have a jawline kind of like Zach from. Saving the bell.
I even have O-Town on my t-shirt right now, which is a boy band from the.
Yeah, I remember. I'm not that old, Marcus. Jesus
one
Christ.
Of my, well, they were a little obscure. One of my. So I became friends with one of the guys in the band, and we actually did a stand-up set together at a Soul Joel's not too long ago.
Oh, really? Well, he's doing stand-up now.
Yeah, yeah. He goes on with Michael Yo sometimes. It's great.
That's dope. Was he any good?
Yeah, his name's Trevor Penick. Yeah, he was great. I mean, the thing was is that he lived this amazing life as this pop star. When he went on stage, he was talking about like dating and relationships. I'm like, bro, you have such a rare story. I want to hear about you
hear
being
that.
In a boy band. I want to hear about the TRL days. I want to hear about the American, the Billboard Music Awards. I want to hear about you playing on like NBA Entertainment League. I want to hear those types of stories. And he's like, yeah, I had this really funny story about Kevin Hart. I'm like, well, you should talk about it. It's great. So
that,
I think
that always happens
more-
when people from outside of the comedy business go into the comedy business. They want to do impressions of comedians, basically. So they want to do the, you're like, no, 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 bro. We want to hear the interesting shit that you do.
Like, your life, what makes you unique. And it's so like, there's so much to work on. Like he was in a popular boy band. He opened for Britney Spears in an arena, like, like 50 dates with Britney. Like there's so much you can talk about.
Yeah.
Jesus. Marcus, you're a handsome guy. What was it like in high school dating wise? Forget about the education thing. How did that, I mean, did you have any skills whatsoever? Or you were just so busy watching wrestling that nothing ever else ever happened?
In dating in high school?
Yeah, like what were you like in high school? I'm always curious what people were like dating wise, because I wasn't shit.
I had like three girlfriends in high school. And they all were
not bad.
You know,
that's like one a year. That's actually like one a year. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. So, I mean, I like a lot of people in high school thought I was gay, which kind of bothered me a little bit because I wasn't, but I was in theater. I was very outgoing. I loved boy bands. I loved wrestling. Like it, like I checked a lot of boxes.
Yeah. On the other end of that. Right.
Right. So that didn't help. But I
didn't help your dating situation. Yeah.
I mean, it was fine because I was, like I said, I was like in relationship, like I dated a girl for a year, a girl for 2 years in high school. So I only had like the first half of freshman year, I wasn't with a girl. And I kind of think maybe I was with these girls to prove everyone, no, I'm not gay. Cause like when you're in high school and there's like a gay rumor about you, that's a huge deal.
Back in the day, more
than now.
And like, the, you know, that can really bother someone, especially when people are calling you gay and making it sound like a bad thing. Like if I was really gay, I would have been so depressed and it would have really just destroyed me. So I can't imagine what people went through back then when being bullied and stuff like that. So I, you know, my dad was also the principal of the high school that I went to, you think would like stop the that would stop the bullying, but
or make it worse. It was like, the principal and his gay son probably made it worse. Yeah, that's what
People love my dad. And so it was, and he never had to deal with like disciplinary stuff. That was always the assistant principal. So people just saw my dad and like had good positive vibes with him. And he was a cool guy. He played basketball in college. He's a cool guy. But yeah, it was, so that's pretty much how it went for me.
Did you have a good relationship with him?
Very good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Both, all my family's all really tight. In fact, after this, I'm going down to meet my brother for dinner. Nice. He lives in the city too. So yeah, it's a tight family.
That's dope. It's funny because I was doing a consultation with somebody, and the guy who I was talking to, he was talking about like he listens to the show. Well, he started listening to the show, and actually he was like a marketing dude, and he was like helping us, you know, trying to help us grow the show, the guy said, he said, yeah, you know, I should get you to talk to my son and da, 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 like that. And he goes, you know, it's just, he was like, oh, he's 26 years old and he's, you know, he doesn't really know what he wants to do. And he did this and that and that and that and that. And I said to the guy, I said, I go, he's 26 years old. I go, is he just totally oblivious? And he goes, well, you know, I don't know. He has no direction. And I said, well, let me ask you something. I go, cause it just seemed to me like the guy was disappointed about who his son had become, you know? And I said to him, do you honestly think that your son has been around you for 26 years and he's unaware of the fact that you are disappointed at who he has become as a kid? That you're frivolously, oh, you should talk to my son, which is basically saying my son's not good enough. I go, but he's been listening. He's around you for 26 years. I go, do you think that you've hid that from him? That you're disappointed with him, that he's not more like you? And so it's interesting, like you talk about your dad playing basketball and being a principal and all of this stuff. But the fact that you say that you had such a close relationship like that talks about, that speaks to the maturity of your dad and the openness of him giving you the ability to be the theater geek and the performer, as opposed to the guy who was playing basketball, who, you know what I mean? The popular guy.
I think my dad was almost living vicariously through me, though, because he was so supportive, and he knew where I shined in the world, and which was like performing and doing theater at the time. He would even let me take his car that was parked in the principal's spot when I'm a senior in high school, skip school, go to the gym, and do, because at the time I was a professional juggler, so I would do like professional juggling shows. Yeah, I was hearing
about this juggling thing. Like,
Marcus is a phenomenal juggler. He's basically has given up his career. I don't know if you've given it up fully, but he wants to do comedy legitimately, because unfortunately juggling is looked down upon in the comedy community, but he's fantastic at what he does.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I like juggling, and it's done a lot for me, but the only thing I wasn't doing was evolving as a person, as a performer. When I stopped relying on my props to carry me through a show, it really changed the way I thought about comedy. And it really opened, you'd think it would close doors, but really it opened so many other doors, so many areas I can go now. I don't have to rely on having to do a juggling show. If I want to tell a story, a long form story, I'm able to do that. If I want to talk about my relationship with my wife or my granddaughter, or my stepdaughter, I'm able to do that.
Wow. That's
what, by the way, like that goes to talking with guys, like what courage it takes for like reinventing yourself, because Marcus had established a very successful career as a juggler, like touring and, you know, doing cruises and just making a good living. But he acknowledged, hey, I'm not evolving and I'm not happy fully, so I have to adjust and take a risk and reinvent myself. And that's the thing that I kind of had to do as a human being, and that guys have to do sometimes. If you're not happy with yourself, you got to be willing to take the risk and change who you are. If you're not happy, better yourself. And it's courageous to a degree.
And thank you. And if you make a mistake, if you don't like it, like you can always go back. You know, I might be doing juggling shows in 8 months from now. We don't know. But, you know, I think life is all about taking risks. And I think if you, you know, you just take chances and try something. And yeah, you're right. I wasn't happy with, you know, my juggling show was great. It was fine. There wasn't anything wrong with it. But I'm having so much fun just going to shows and not bringing like trunks of shit with me.
Right.
But I think, Harry, what you're saying about when you're like a man and you want to change, it kind of goes back to being self-aware enough. You have to be self-aware enough first to know how other people think of you, and then how you think of yourself. Because being self-aware doesn't mean you kind of understand how people perceive you, but how you perceive yourself.
Mm.
And also, that's never too late. Like, you can, it's not too late. You didn't, like, you're like, hey, I committed 10 years, 20 years to this. What am I going to do? I can't just stop. Like, you can, right. Like Dante always says, the cool thing about, you don't have to do that tomorrow. You don't have to be that tomorrow. Like,
I used to say, being a bitch.
There you go. Excuse me for trying to make it palpable to.
Being a bitch, the greatest thing in the world about being a bitch is that tomorrow you don't have to be, you know. Starting tomorrow,
you know, I tried to put that on coffee mugs, and it's just not moving the way I thought it would.
It's gonna go. I think we just can't spell it out. We'll do.
You wanted to underline the bitch part and put it in bold.
And I was gonna just put blanks for the rest of it. Being a bitch, and then all the rest, you fill in the rest. There's something that crossed my mind about this, but you know what? Let's shut this down, and then we're gonna do a few minutes on the Patreon for the Patreon followers. And can you hang out?
Of course.
Can you plug all your stuff, any of your social media, and anything that you want the fans to know about?
Yeah, I do shows all around the country, all around. You can get me on Instagram at Marcus J Monroe, TikTok at Marcus J Monroe. My website is TupacIsStillAlive.com.
That's dope.
And fine. Just search my name, Marcus Monroe, and it should pull up.
Harry, talk to me.
You know what? I'll plug. In addition to at Harry Terjanian and all my social media, if you want to see the video of my Andy Kaufman Award thing that Marcus is part of, you can go to YouTube, put in Harry Turjanian and Andy Kaufman Award, and there's a whole piece of what I did to win the Andy Kaufman Award.
Yeah, that was crazy. Harry didn't talk to me for like a week when that, because he was so busy. I can't talk, but I got to be
all night. All night.
I bet. I mean, that was you. We filmed that maybe like 2 months before the awards, the competition. So you had this in your head like for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Everything with me, Dante Nero. Yeah, I mean, y'all know how to get me on social media. Just Dante Nero and all that stuff will come up. If you want a one-on-one consultation, though, you can always go DanteNero.com, click on consult. Don't forget the Man School YouTube page. There's a lot of stuff, clips and stuff going up on that. My YouTube page, I'm starting to work on that. I'm starting to put clips on that. GYBB, Get Your Balls Back. WWDD, What Would Dante Do? The Sexual Revolution is being podcasted. I love y'all, man. Don't forget to sign up for the Patreon, too, and you'll be getting this behind-the-scenes stuff also. That's patreon.com/manschool202. We out, man. Thank you.
Manschool 202 is created by Dante Nero, hosted by Dante Nero, with Harry Turjanian and Andre D. Thompson, produced by Harry Turjanian, executive producers Matt Kleinschmidt, Harry Turjanian, and Dante Nero.